Hi, I'm Becky Burrows, and you are listening to Leadership Becomes Her, where I provide simple, strategic solutions for Christian women who lead. In last week's episode, I talked about the power of personal reflection as a learning exercise. In personal reflection, we don't ruminate or beat ourselves up for things we have said and done that we regret. Instead, personal reflection demands that you ask yourself a series of questions so that you can better understand why you made the choices you did and what you can do differently in the future. It's a learning exercise that is absolutely essential to personal growth and development. But what about personal reflection as a team? Can a team learn from this joint exercise? Is it essential to growth and development as a team? Does it have the same impact? You better believe it does. In today's episode, I'm going to share with you four questions you can ask yourselves as a team that will send your team on the road to continuous improvement. Now, it requires that you leave your ego at the door so that this exercise can be a safe place for those involved to speak truth. And it has the power to completely transform the climate of your team. Want to know more? Let's dive in to today's episode. Hey friend, are you a people-pleasing, conflict-avoiding leader? Is your secret relationship with fear affecting your leadership decisions? Do you want to learn how to build credibility and confidence or to navigate difficult conversations? Do you long to manage your time without sacrificing your family or self-care? Welcome to Leadership Becomes Her. I'm Becky Burrows, your host and a minister and life and leadership coach with over 50 years experience in leadership. Now, I firmly believe God has given you everything you need to lead well. You have the toolbox. You just need to learn how to use the tools. So get comfy or start a mindless task. You know how to pause or rewind if you need to. Let's get started. Now, when I first started working in ministry 17 years ago, I was coming from a background in education. Ministry was new to me, and sometimes when you come to a situation with fresh eyes, you're able to see things that those who have been there a long time can't see. It's a little like your house where you've trained your eyes not to look at the offensive parts like dirty carpet or walls that need painting, but then someone comes in for the first time and they might immediately notice those things. So I had been on staff at this church for a few weeks, and there was a church event that took place over the weekend. And the minister who was over that event did on Monday morning what I call the drive-by. When he arrived that morning, he stopped at the door of every office, offered a Monday morning greeting, and then said something like, "Hey, what'd you think about the event that he was in charge of? I thought it went great. Everyone seemed to love it. What do you think?" And one by one, the response was always the same. The employee being asked at the time agreed with him. And after he made the round, he went on to his office with a spring in his step because everyone thought he did a great job. But did he? We will never know, because he failed to ask the right questions. And by leading with his opinion, he skewed the answers. Because his team loves him and supports him, no one wanted to be the one to burst his bubble. After all, the event was over. There was nothing they could do to change what went wrong, so why even bring it up? Why ruin his day over something he cannot change after the fact? Here's why. Because the team just missed a valuable learning opportunity. Chances are, he'll do that event or another one next year. And unless he and the others take the time to reflect on the event with humility and honesty and document what they uncovered, he will likely make the same mistakes next time. Now, I entitled last week's episode, "There Are No Mistakes, Only Opportunities to Learn." And if you haven't listened to it yet, I encourage you to do so. It's about how you can use the practice of personal reflection to turn mistakes into learning opportunities. It's absolutely essential to continuous improvement, and it requires humility. It's the same with a team. If a team, let's say a church staff or the staff of a nonprofit group, is committed to excellence, if they are diligently seeking continuous improvement, they must be willing to leave their egos at the door, or as they say in the Army, leave your stripes at the door. and enter into the reflective practice with their team. It's a total game changer for any organization that routinely participates in this kind of practice. Now, think of all the events that you might have as a whole church throughout the year. Now add the events that a particular ministry has. Each of these could be the topic for its own reflective practice. It's similar to a debrief, which from my church staff used to have those from time to time when I came on board, but debriefs tend to focus on the negative. At least they did where I worked. A reflective practice first celebrates what needs celebrating before looking at what needs changing. So the first thing you need to establish a culture of a reflective practice is to set up the ground rules, and I believe there are at least 10. Ground rule number one, consider that the event is not over until you've had and documented the reflective practice and schedule it as close to the event as possible, certainly within a few days of the event. Ground rule number two, leave ego, pride, and hard feelings at the door, but bring in your openness, your honesty, and teamwork with you. Ground rule number three, invite everyone who needs to be there. For example, a reflective practice about Easter needs to include more than just the lead minister and the worship minister. Easter is one of those events that affects the whole staff, certainly all of the ministers. And if there are other events that day in addition to the worship service, such as an Easter egg hunt or an Easter breakfast or lunch, or if the facilities or hospitality were altered in any way to account for increased attendance, then more need to be invited. Consider inviting a key volunteer or two, and even an involved member or two, to get their perspective. Because those of us on the ministry staff, well, we tend to think that what we planned went well because we know how much time and thought went into it. But sometimes our work falls flat, and we don't know if we don't ask. So take some time to consider who should be there, and don't be worried about the size of your group. Your group will have a leader, which I'll explain later, and that leader will control how much is said and the time frame. Ground rule number four, limit the meeting to 1 hour, period. Now, I've done many of these reflective practices, and the only ones that I was not able to limit to 1 hour was the week-long kids camp and certain Easter Sundays because there were so many different activities. But overall, 1 hour is plenty. Ground rule number five, find a comfortable room to meet in, free from distractions. I like to use an easel with a large tablet and a marker to write what the group is saying so that they can see what is being written. This always, always gives the participants ideas when they can see what others have said. I'll explain more about that later. Ground rule number six, you need to assign a scribe, a person who's going to write or summarize what the participants are saying. Ground rule number seven, you need someone to lead the meeting. Now, usually it is not the person who led the event, as they need to be focused on adding ideas. It is helpful if it is someone not directly involved or someone who was minimally involved in the event. Ground rule number eight, stay on topic. If the topic is what went right about the event and someone goes down a rabbit hole of adding what went wrong or what we should have done indifferently, the leader needs to bring them back on topic. This is absolutely essential to making sure the meeting stays under 1 hour. Ground rule number nine, whatever topic you are on, and there are four, everyone has a say. It is not necessary that everyone agree, and nothing is too small to mention. Ground rule number 10, once the meeting is over, someone is assigned to take the tablet sheets and transcribe them onto the computer onto a shared drive that everyone has access to. This transcription should include the names of everyone at the meeting as well as those who were invited but unable to attend. Now, I know some of you will automatically think that writing on the tablet is not necessary. It's old school. But if you choose to have someone take the notes directly to a computer, just be prepared to meet for longer than 1 hour, because there will be many, many times when someone will ask you to read what the other person said, or they will repeat what someone has already said because they weren't listening. Also, if you can see the notes as they are being written, you'll know that what is being written actually reflects what you said. So, you've sent the invitations, you know who is coming. The room is ready, the scribe and the reflective practice leader are in place. Everyone has arrived. The scribe has written down all who are in attendance. What's next? I think it's helpful to begin in prayer. It sets the tone for the humility of the meeting. On the tablet at the top of the page are the words, "What worked?" The leader of the meeting reminds everyone that we will stay on topic, listing all of the things that worked, and nothing is too small to mention. Then the attendees begin calling out popcorn style anything and everything that worked. So, for example, it's Easter. And after all of the big things are mentioned, we might add that the weather worked for us, or that the children's ministry had enough volunteers to accommodate extra kids, or there were enough trash cans at the breakfast. It's important to note that if someone says that, anything, and then someone else disagrees, that person should stay silent. that person should stay silent until we get to what did not work. Focus on what did work. And if you don't agree, save it for when we get to what did not work. Stay on topic. This first one is the fun part. It's the part we all love. We get to talk about everything we love about the day or the event. And for the one who led the event, it is so fun to hear how everyone enjoyed it and admired the work that you did. This celebration of what worked, what went right, is so important to talk about and to document. Everyone's voice matters. Nothing is too small to mention. Now, when you feel that you have exhausted everything that worked, reserve the right to come back to it if you think of something else, and pull that paper off and attach it to the wall. Now, this is where it's helpful to spring for the tablets that are made by Post-it and have the adhesive strip on the back so that you can stick it to the wall. The next piece of paper is entitled, What Didn't Work? Or, What Didn't Work As Well As We Would Have Thought? Now, what's important here, and this is vitally important, is for the one who led the event to be the very first one to speak up. This demonstrates humility and openness to constructive criticism and honesty, and sets the tone that this is a safe place to be honest. I have left my ego at the door. I want to learn how to make this event even better. Now, I've heard leaders begin with, well, what didn't work is I forgot to, or I failed to, or it didn't cross my mind that this would happen. And that's fine. But what is not fine is for the others in attendance to say, let's say the leader's name is Bob, well, Bob didn't schedule enough people, or Bob didn't plan for. If those things need to be mentioned, which it sounds like they do, then it would be better to say, I'm not sure enough people were scheduled. Or I wonder if we planned for enough, because casting blame and assigning names to things that went wrong are not helpful unless the person to blame provides that himself. Now, I want to give you two personal examples to bring this point home. I work at a church where we have a worship minister who's also a foodie. He loves to cook for large groups of people, and he's very good at it. So one year, he planned an Easter brunch with multiple stations and every option imaginable. It was amazing. And he did the whole thing by himself. He worked on it for days and days, wearing himself out doing something he absolutely loved. He was also away from home a good bit, pricing items, making purchases, cooking, and setting everything up. And by the time Easter came and went, he was exhausted, and his family was tired of not seeing him. The day before the reflective practice, I went to him and said, tomorrow's our reflective practice for Easter, and it's going to go one of two ways. Because we all love you, we're either going to tell you the truth, which could potentially hurt your feelings and you're going to feel beat up, or because we all love you, we're going to withhold the truth and you're going to have no idea what went wrong, even though you worked so hard. I strongly recommend you come into that room ready to lead the way on what went wrong, which will make it okay for us to join in. So the next day, this minister, with the 1-2 punch of wisdom and humility, started the discussion of what went wrong, confessing that he tried to do everything himself rather than ask for help. And by the time he realized he was in over his head, he didn't know what to do but just keep going. And what happened after that was a beautiful thing. The love and compassion in that room was contagious. One by one, each minister reminded him that Easter is so important that everyone on staff should have extra duties, not just him. In that very meeting, this team came up with a plan for the following year that was documented, that evenly divided duties for that special day, all because of the wisdom and humility of one man. In contrast, we had another minister who happened to be young and relatively inexperienced. He was in charge of a large event that included many volunteers. This event covered several days during which he lashed out at volunteers and demonstrated displays of temper that sent several away in tears. It was a mess. The day before the reflective practice, I had exactly the same conversation with him. He arrived at the reflective practice with a cap pulled low over his head, making it difficult to see his eyes. He walked in, slumped in a chair with his arms crossed. He did not say one word throughout the entire reflective practice about the event that he led. This was a huge opportunity missed. It created a tense atmosphere, it inhibited learning, and it prevented team building. It was a dismal failure. The only one I have ever experienced in all my years of doing reflective practices, all because wisdom and humility were not in the room. Needless to say, he didn't last very long in ministry. It is absolutely essential. If we are going to learn from what did not work, we must leave our egos at the door and bring wisdom and humility. The third question, what might we do differently next time? Now, the answers could be because of what went wrong, or it could be an idea that someone has or heard about that is worth trying next time. Now, this is an important question because there are always people who are quick to say what went wrong, but they have no idea what the solution to the problem should be. So those coming with their list of what went wrong should spend as much time thinking of possible solutions. And finally, the fourth question is the invitation to think outside the box. What if? Now, this is a fun question for those who are comfortable thinking creatively, bouncing ideas off of each other. And it is very difficult for the black and white thinkers. So it's important to remind everyone that all ideas are important. There is no such thing as a stupid idea, even though it may not work in this setting. It may spark an idea that would work. Now, I think typically a team will spend about 20 minutes on the first question, 20 minutes on the second question, and a combined 20 minutes on the third and fourth question. A couple of things before I close. I said earlier that it's okay if we don't agree. So let's say that someone says that there were enough trash cans set out at the meal. So that's listed under what worked. And then you get to what didn't work, and someone from facilities said, well, there were in fact not enough trash cans set out. As a result, someone from facilities had to empty the trash repeatedly through the meal, which is something the other person didn't notice. In this instance, add that trash cans, there were not enough trash cans, go ahead and add that to what didn't work, and in parentheses, give the person's name who said it didn't work. Now, here's why we do this. 1 year later, when you're about to plan Easter again, the first thing you do is pull up last year's reflective practice and review it. And you'll see, oh, what worked? We had enough trash cans. So you're mentally noting that you want to be sure you had the same number of trash cans. Then you look at what didn't work and you go, oh, facilities said we did not have enough trash cans. In this case, they knew better. And so in this case, their opinion would carry more weight. Sometimes the difference of opinion, nobody's right, nobody's wrong, and you have to make a judgment call. Let's say it's something entirely different. So the person in charge of communicating the event said, oh, I think the communication went well because she can attest to all that she did to communicate. But you also invited some members to the meeting and one of them says, well, the communication did not work because you tend to rely on emails to communicate and they often go to my spam folder. In this case, even though the person in charge of communication on staff is the communication expert, what carries more weight is the opinion of those who were supposed to receive the communication. So the differing views tell a more accurate story. So you want to create space for people not to agree on everything and that be okay. Now, in my 17 years in ministry, I have served with church staffs that value the reflective practice and do them regularly, as well as church staffs who don't see the value, either because the team leader doesn't like meetings in general or because he prefers to focus on what works and dismiss what doesn't work. And I can tell you, I would rather be on a team that values openness, honest communication, and continuous improvement than one that does not. Things are always going to go wrong. We will always make mistakes. Why not learn from them so that we don't repeat the same mistakes next year? Now, let's say you have responsibility over a ministry, but you're not the lead minister, and your lead minister does not see the value in an exercise such as this one. You can still, and I urge you to conduct reflective practices within your ministry with your stakeholders. And even if your whole staff does them together for a church-wide activity, you still need to do them for your own special events in your ministry. So, for example, when I was children's minister, there were events I did every year like Easter egg hunt, kids camp, back to school bash, trunk or treat, Christmas play. And then there were events that I did some years, but not others. If the event is worth having, it is worth reflecting on and learning from. It is a one-hour event that takes place within a few days of the big event that marks the end of it and sets the stage for the event the next year. Because pulling that reflective practice up and reading it before planting the event next year will save you a ton of planning time. If you want to know more about the reflective practice for you or your church team, or you'd like to have training in how to effectively have reflective practices for team building and effective communication, send me a DM or email me at hello@beckyburrows.com. I would love to provide that training for your team. I want to help you build a solid foundation upon which your leadership can stand tall. Hey, let's do this again next week. It is my prayer that this podcast inspired you, blessed you, or made you think. If so, please share it with a friend, subscribe, and please leave a review. Hey, I want to connect with you. Follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Send me a DM or email me at hello@beckyburrows.com. If you are a Christian woman who leads and you are interested in one of my leadership boot camps for women in ministry, this is a 4-week workshop, or becoming part of a Kairos cohort, year-long group coaching, send me a DM or an email for more information. We'll talk soon.